SEN Central, Hamish and Dean. Thanks to Winning Edge Investments.
Treat your betting like a business and invest intelligently with Winning Edge Investments. WinningEdgeInvestments.com.
Don't forget to join our conversation this morning, 041-690-5052. But let's welcome in the team. Dean Lester, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gareth.
And hello to you, Hamish McLaughlin.
G'day, Gareth. G'day, Dino. Hello, everyone listening.
Plenty to look forward to this weekend. Group 1 racing here in Melbourne with a Sir Rupert Clark. We've also got, of course, that George Main up there in Sydney in a fascinating final round of the AFL, Dino.
Yeah, plenty to watch, Gareth. Certainly with the Group 1 action in both states. As you said, the final round of the footy, it's crept up so quickly, and now we're into it.
Now, we'll start off with you, Hamish, as we do every Friday, the Hall of Fame.
Okay, Hall of Fame now, but we also need to get back to Dean and his sort of health going into Friday night footy. Saints win, they're in. I'm worried about Dino, but Hall of Fame, I've got two nominees this weekend. The first sort of random and left field, but the director of Freeman, the documentary, I hope I'm getting the name correct, but Lawrence Billier, if you ever wanted to produce a doco on an important moment, he'd probably chosen the right one for Australian sports fans, and it was faultless. So into the Hall of Fame, first director to get into the Hall of Fame. My wife cried, my eight-year-old cried. Lex started playing with his dinosaurs halfway through, but he'll enjoy it in a couple of years. But no, I thought it was outstanding. And Dino, come with me on this one. Dominic Thiem. Now, I know that he benefited from Novak being disqualified and Roger and Rafa not playing the US Open, but he went in as the number two seed, number three in the world. He becomes the first man at the US Open to come back from two sets to love down to win a major, the fifth in the Open era to come from two sets to love down. The other four, Borg, Lendl, Agassi and Gaudier. That was all at the French. But when you're down 2-6, 4-6 in a major final and you've already lost three major finals, you'd be in a very, very dark place. Career goal to try and win a major. You're thinking, I'm going to go 0-4. Against Sasha Zverev, who was playing well. And then he wins the final three, 6-4, 6-3, 7-6, 8-6 in the fifth. He's a major champion for life. He overcomes the nerves. He goes into the Hall of Fame for me.
Yeah, I'd agree. Look, it was only at the Australian Open this year where he had a huge chance of beating Novak in the final, and Novak just wore him down. And to start off like he did on Monday morning, our time, he was in a world of pain. But just to fight back, it just might open it up for him now that he has got that the first win on the board.
Hamish, sorry. Can we back him in
say the first player since Stan Wawrinka at the US in 2016 to win a major other than Rafa Novak.
Hey, can we back him to beat Rafa in Paris?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think Rafa on the clay is sort of ethereal, sort of superhuman.
Hey, Dino, what's your favourite sports documentary?
Oh, geez, it's close. When We Were Kings, we've highlighted a lot on this show. There's a few, but that was very, very good television on Sunday night. I really enjoyed it.
Hamish?
I think The Last Dance is, because it's so recent. Senna was, it was just filmed as if they knew that he was going to pass away. I just couldn't believe the footage they had and the conversations they had of him talking. I just thought that was fabulous. And I watched Pele the other night on Netflix, the movie, not a doco, and really enjoyed it. But for me, Senna and Freeman and The Last Dance are sort of the trifecta, I think.
You know this one, Dino. I love All for One. Now, this was a documentary on Jerry Ryan's Green Edge cycling team. And I watched it, and I laughed, and I cried, and I was inspired like a cyclist I never heard of before, this doco and Matthew Heyman and his ups and downs. And, I love that doco. Have you watched it?
Yeah, it's very good. Absolutely. It's very good. I mean, there's some really good local documentaries. I even, going back a bit while the Year of the Dog was a terrific insight into the Footscray Football Club in a year of absolute turmoil when they sacked the coach mid-season.
Pete Dixon's got a whole series of documentaries that you could watch on coaches, individuals, years, cricket. He's superb. The one thing that I thought, Dean, the other night, was extraordinary, and Gareth, you might have been the same. I was genuinely nervous that Cathy wasn't going to win the 400 the other night. They built it up so brilliantly that you thought, maybe she doesn't win. Maybe I'm getting this wrong.
No, I totally agree. I was watching with Dana and she goes, thank God we know the result.
I love the and seeing the backstory of that. You know, we all knew about the suit, wearing the suit for the first time on the biggest stage. But it was the 28th of March that she was testing it in Melbourne. So it was it had been a fair bit in the planning.
How brave was she, Hamish, to wear that suit?
Well, everything about it was just extraordinary. A beautiful Indigenous lady in Sydney at the Olympics, having not lost for a couple of years, in that suit. After, and I read this line during the week, that she'd walked on water to open the cauldron. I mean, everything was perfect, but you needed to win wearing that suit at home, and she did.
Just the last one on that. I loved her mum's comments when she was obviously heading up to light the flame there, and she goes, I was just worried that she wasn't going to be burnt.
Thinking reflection we all were.
Yeah. Our topic of conversation today is our favourite sporting matches, races. So we football match, could be cricket match, it could be one of the great races, a great contest that we've enjoyed over the years, and we'll kick it all off with you, Dino.
Well, I'm giving the Saints a bit of a pump up for tonight, I think. I don't think there's been a better home and away game, personally. And it was on the 5th of July in 2009. It was round 14. It was St Kilda and Geelong. And they went into the game both undefeated, 13 and zip. And the start, St Kilda got the jump. Geelong were wearing them down. And it came to the last couple of minutes. And all the big names were there. Riewoldt, Selwood, Bartel, Ablett. They were all playing their part. But probably the most unlikely of heroes stole the show.
Goes to Luke Ball, dropping back is Riewoldt. It's in his ballpark. Gardner! The giant from the west. If he kicks it, you doubt St Kilda can lose. He's kicked it. Been a really valuable contribution by Gardner, those four goals.
And... Big Michael Gardner, Dino.
Yeah, four goals on a massive stage. Still, I think, the biggest crowd, Hame, ever to go to the Etihad to watch a footy game, over 54,000 people. The other thing that we cut out in that was there was a five-minute break between him taking that mark and kicking the goal, because in taking the mark, he accidentally knocked out Harry Taylor. So it was a dramatic end to it, just a magnificent afternoon.
Nice to hear Dennis's voice, the giant from the west. And I was calling that game for Triple M, and we were sort of the B-grade team, you know, the Friday night team, and the Saturday afternoon team called themselves the A-graders. But Quatermain and I and Dunstall called that game, and I just could not believe the speed of the ball moving around the stadium. It was sort of almost like calling a horse race. Now there's so many moments to breathe and let things play out. But the speed of that game, Dino, was the thing that took me.
Yeah, it was, and watching it back again a couple of weeks ago, it was just the speed, you say, and the way that St Kilda jumped them, but the tenacity of Geelong to fight back, and ultimately it was a precursor to the grand final. Sadly, the result didn't go that way on the last Saturday in September.
Yeah,
Hamish.
Well, I'm going to 1989. It's an obvious one, but the VFL grand final, the last before the AFL grand final. Now, it was 6 points in the end. But it was 40 at quarter time, 37 at half time, and 36 at three quarter time. But just to put it all in context, Hawthorn had finished on top of the ladder with a 19-3 record. Geelong had finished third behind Essendon with 16-6. The Cats had scored the new record for highest points in a season. They're averaging 133 points a game. But in the final series leading up to the game, Geelong had lost the qualifying final to Essendon by 76, then beat Melbourne by 63. Then defeated the Bombers by 94 in the prelim. Couch had won the Brownlow medal on the Monday night. But everything about it was just extraordinary. The margins at quarter, half and three quarter suggested it was just going to be a very dull grand final. But at the bounce, Dermy and Yates had had that collision, which was payback for earlier in the year. He'd had internal bleeding and broken ribs, and the doctor went out and knew how ordinary it was. He just said, put me down in the pocket. While that was happening, Ablett kicked the first, Dunsell kicked then. Then Brereton kicked the first of his, and somehow he stayed on. But in the end, it was one of the great last quarters. 42 goals for the match. Ablett kicked 9. 72 scores for the match. 21 scores in the last quarter. And this is how it finished.
Very interesting, Dennis, at that first bounce, because Yates came off the wing and went straight for Dermot Brereton. Dermot's down on his knees, as you can see.
Grimes goes for goal. Brownless at the back. Ablett! This could be the record number of goals kicked in the grand final. At the moment, held by Dermot Brereton. Gary Ablett has kicked 8. A chance to kick his 9. Here goes Ablett for goal number 9. And he's threatened it.
It looks like it's all over. The dream of back-to-back pennants is all but there as far as the Hawks are concerned. There's the siren. Hawthorne have won it by 6 points. A heart stopper. Ladies and gentlemen, you've just seen it.
I was having a look at the spine of Hawthorne. Langford, Mew, Condon, Brereton, Dunstall. Following was Michael Tuck, the captain, and Johnny Platton. It was just extraordinary. On the other side, two Hockings, Couch, Bruns, Ablett, Brownless, and Bairstow. But Gary wins the Norm Smith medal, and he was just one of four instances at that time where the Norm Smith went to the loser. It was just, on every front, great theatre.
How long was Dipper in hospital for?
9 months. I did read that only 13 Hawthorn players ended the match fit. I mean, Dipper talks about how they all ended up in hospital. I mean, that, to have that many that were injured and still get home was extraordinary. But the last quarter is as good a thing as you'll ever see.
I'm going back to 1999, World Cup over in England, semi-final, Australia taking on South Africa. Now, the Aussies had a slow start to that World Cup. If you go back to the final match of the Super Sixes, they were taking on South Africa. They were in all sorts of trouble. Steve Waugh's batting, hits one to Herschel Gibbs. Herschel Gibbs catches it, goes to throw it up in celebration, but goes a little too early, drops it, and Steve Waugh famously says, "You've just dropped the World Cup there, Herschel." And then we go to the semi-final, Australia take on South Africa once again. We only make 213. It probably wasn't enough. But then Shane Warne, who had struggled in a test series just before the World Cup against the West Indies, and he was dropped. He had a fallout with the captain, Steve Waugh, and he had a shoulder reconstruction before that tour in the West Indies. So we're just wondering whether he would get back to his best. He spun a little bit of magic in the early part. He got some early wickets, and then South Africa hit back. South Africa needed to win. They were stuck on 213 or 212, and I'll play you the final ball.
They go for it. And Donald's run out, and Australia are in the final. The match has been tied. What a mix-up. Well, the Australian players, they probably can't even believe their own good fortune. South Africa lost their nerve when it really mattered.
Now, we talk about the LA Clippers choking like they did yesterday or the day before, a couple of days ago in the NBA playoffs. South Africa had a habit, Dino, of choking, and they did that particular afternoon in England.
Yeah, in the most spectacular fashions on their biggest stage to do that and allow Australia onto the final and win the final.
Well, under Mark Waugh too. I know Junior loves to listen to this show, but he was calm under pressure. Like, the ball came to him and he had to underarm it to Gilchrist to run out, Donald. But, yeah, he had to have nerves of steel, and we're probably lucky it went to Waugh.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, those brothers did in times of crisis for the Australian cricket team can never be undersold, and especially that moment.
All right, then, Dino, we'll move on with you for another one of your favourite races of all time now, I think we're coming up to.
Yes, the first of them is the 1992 Cox Plate, and it is a magnificent race. It was dramatic with the fall of naturalism, but when you look at the field, the previous three Caulfield Cup winners were involved: Sitterston, Let's Elope, and Mannerism. A champion in Superimpose, a previous Cox Plate winner in Better Loosen Up, a Golden Slipper winner in Burst, the legend from New Zealand in Rough Habit. It had everything going for it, yet it had an even money favourite in Naturalism, but it was just a race to behold.
Here comes Let's Elope. Let's Elope with a mighty run out wide, going up quickly now. Kinjate in the middle from Muirfield Village, followed by Superimpose. Let's Elope out wide has raced to Kinjate. Slight Chance fights back down the outside. Superimpose. Let's Elope in the middle. Prince Salieri getting a run. Better Loosen Up and Superimpose. Let's Elope in front. Superimpose driving. Super. I think Superimpose to Let's Elope on the Cox Plate. And the judge has called for the photo. The judge has called for the photo at a sensational WS Cox Plate to 1992.
It was a fantastic race. I've got to say, a few mates of mine and I, we had one of the best views in the house. We climbed the rocks to the turn out of the straight there at Moonee Valley, and we were absolutely head on to all that action. It was incredible, and I think of one of my favourite days at the track that day, because we saw Scalacci win earlier in the day, and then this build up to a Cox Plate like no other. We were expecting to crown a budding champion in Naturalism, and all we did was put the exclamation mark on a fantastic career with Superimpose.
Just the call too. I think the call, I mean, sometimes I think looking at the vision is terrific, but hearing it, your mind goes and produces different things. It was well called by Brian, and you know, you heard Dennis today in the 89 grand final, and you heard that call of the Saints Cats match. Here the commentators do a good job under pressure getting the moments right, and we're about to hear one again. I think it's my turn, Gareth. I can't believe I've been so obvious with 89 grand final and the race of the century, but the 66 Cox played in 86. A lot of the times, Dino and Gareth, you know, the races are built up and they're hyped up and the lead-up's enormous, and then the race itself is a disappointment. But the hype going into Our Waverley Star and Bone Crusher was enormous, and Bone Crusher had sort of had that great three-year-old season and won everything. Our Waverley Star had been winning all of his races in New Zealand in the lead-up, including the last clash between the two, which was admittedly over 1,200. But you know, good track, good weather, good conditions. And then when you thought they're about to sort of settle down and fight it out a lot later in the race, at the 800, Bone Crusher and Gary Stewart just make their move. Our Waverley Star just continues to go with him. And the call, you know, I think we'll hear in a moment, was absolutely spot on. Have they gone too early? And then Our Waverley Star gets ahead and you think, well, he'll win. And then Bone Crusher fights back and you think, well, he'll win. And then Our Waverley Star gets in front. It was extraordinary and the call was perfect.
Here come the New Zealanders, Our Waverley Star and Bone Crusher. They've raced to the lead, 600 out. Have they gone too early? Two lengths to Drought running up the third from Society Bay. They were followed then by Drawn Under the Whip at the head of the others, Dinky Fire. But Our Waverley Star, he got a half length of Bone Crusher. He's gone for the whip on Bone Crusher. Three lengths to Drought, followed then by Dinky Fire and Drawn. But the two great New Zealanders have come away on the turn. Our Waverley Star, a half-length Bone Crusher. The Big Red won't give in. Drought running on. Bone Crusher responds to the whip. The roars of the crowd. He races up to Our Waverley Star. 100 out. Bone Crusher, Our Waverley Star. Stride for stride. Nothing in it. Our Waverley Star, the rails. Bone Crusher, the outside. And Bone Crusher races into equine immortality. $1.5 million as he photo finishes Our Waverley Star. Third is the Filbert, followed by...
The extraordinary part about it, Dino, was three wide the journey, Our Waverley Star. I watched it twice yesterday. Four wide past the post for the first time. When you thought he was going to gas it, he found a way. You thought Bone Crusher wouldn't fight back, but did. It was just fabulous viewing. But I thought Bill Collins was going to gas it too. He had to go so early, and he maintained it and kept lifting.
But I think that's the undersold moment of that call, Haim, is that you don't need vision to know those horses were fatigued, because Bill went at the speed they were going.
Yeah.
He went quick at the half mile. He went with them, and he was going their speed at the line. You know, it was a great thing Bill used to always say, is that the best race callers don't need the vision. They can paint the picture for you, and that's painted magnificently.
And it's, as we say, the sort of the Wait for Age Championship for Australia and New Zealand. For a dollar, Dino, who ran third?
The Filbert.
$1, but I mean, you forget that the Filbert ran third full stop. I stopped the vision of who actually did run third. I'd watched it 50 times and didn't know.
And the horse that ran fourth ended up causing one of the great upsets about 18 months later. Dandy Andy.
Yeah.
Dandy Andy in the Australian Cup. Okay, so it was a New Zealand trifecta.
Yeah, it was.
All right, Dan, your final favourite moment today?
This wasn't like a race like the Australian Cup, like the Cox Plate. It was the Australian Cup of 1992, but I just think this was nearly the perfect race. I think Let's Elope was in stunning form. She went to the race as a warm favourite. She broke the track record, smashed the track record, and for me it was just a perfect race and probably, other than the Melbourne Cup, the highlight of her career.
Let's Elope hooking to the outside at the 400-metre mark now, and it's Prince Salieri racing up to the lead. Shiva's Revenge a length and a half behind, and here comes the big mare. Let's Elope is winding up powerfully. She's racing up on the outside to Prince Salieri. Shiva's Revenge in the centre is not as good as this mare. No way. She's racing away. The champion mare's racing clear. Let's Elope from Shiva's Revenge, and Let's Elope dominates the Australian Cup and wins it by 3.5. A magnificent win by a great mare. Let's Elope coming from last.
And that was the thing. She came from last, rounded them up, and won in her style of what she was. And that dominance of 6 or 7 months there, she was the absolute star of Australian racing.
Yep, what a darling she was. It's 5 minutes to 11. This is Dean and Haim on this Friday on RSN Central. Time for a quick break. We'll come back and we'll finish off this segment this morning, including Dino's Friday fill-up, Dino's doorstop, and we might ask his thoughts too on the big Group 1, the Sir Rupert Clark, tomorrow afternoon at Caulfield. Great to be with you on this Friday morning here on RSN Central. You are with Gareth Hall, Dean Lester and Hamish McLaughlin. A few SMSs coming through, lads. Also, Fire in Babylon, the story of the West Indies cricket in the 70s, Dino.
I haven't seen that one, Gareth, but that would be a terrific vision, because they were the electric side of cricket in the 70s.
Kathy was never in doubt, but gee, that they built that up well. I didn't know she had only lost once in 4 years prior to that race. Amazing, really enjoyed it. That's from Damien there, Haim.
Yeah, I think the pressure that she must have felt, I know that we all feel pressure at different times, but when you know that every Australian is hoping you do something, even if you are the best in the world at it, it comes with an enormous amount of pressure. The expectation was extraordinary. She handled it brilliantly. The burden was carried, and she produced, as we saw, a moment that none of us will ever forget.
The Headingley test last year, when Ben Stokes went mad and Lyon dropped that run out, that takes some beating. Unfortunately, it wasn't great for us, Dean, hey?
Yeah, and then we used the review at the wrong moment as well. Yeah. It was a really bad day for Australian cricket when Ben Stokes kept going, but it was a really bad few minutes with that dropped chance of runouts and then the review.
Hi, Gareth. What about the 2016 NBA Finals, the super team, the Warriors taking on the superstar LeBron James and his Cleveland Cavaliers? 3-1 down. This was one of the great performances, and LeBron carried his team to a comeback to a victory in game number 7. I'm a Bomber. Best game for me, the Bombers in the 84 Grand Final. And this was a ripper, Haim, when the Bombers came back from 48 points down against the Crows in 1993. Nice. I was there for both games. Remember the Leon Baker goal like it was yesterday.
Yeah, I was a bit of a Crows fan, obviously, and I was watching it at home with some guys that lived and breathed the Crows, and we started to book grand final tickets, trying to work out how we'd do shifts driving over the border. We're all set. Then Michael Long came to life, and suddenly it was a pretty dreary old day, but that was some sort of a comeback. I mean, Michael Long in the prelim in the grand final was just insane.
Dino, this is a question for you. How would the whip rules go in the bone crusher era?
Well, simpler times.
Protest.
that was it. I mean, Gary Stewart just started winding up from a long way out, Lance O'Sullivan, and because they'd gone from so far out, they just had to keep the horses' momentums going too.
Now, Dean, I want to play you a clip from last week, and I wonder if you've maybe changed websites.
You can go to janebunn.net/your forecast. And you can just tap in any suburb you like. So I've got it on Flemington and updating it regularly. And yeah, it looks a bit nasty come tomorrow afternoon.
I think we all got it wrong last week, Dino.
Yeah, and now, after watching Have You Been Paying Attention on Monday night, I've worked out that the Weather Bureau are blaming the lack of planes in the air for not getting enough data. So there you go. So, not only Jane got it wrong on the weekend.
That'll do me. Dino's doorstop, maybe Jane Dunn.
Wow, could have been. I'm going to mention Hugh Bowman. I just think... More would be nearly an "Are you okay?" doorstop, because he had extended period off with a personal issue and gave himself a break. His first ride back was that incident where Andrew Atkins fell. His first day back after that suspension, he gets a controversial ride on Farnan, and now he's out again. So his body of work over the last 6 months is becoming so minimal. You just wonder how he's travelling.
Two questions here: one for you and Haim, and one for you, Dino. You're not the expert, Haim. You see that on Saturday, and do you think that Huey's done something wrong? Do you think, what the hell is he doing? And then I'll ask you, Dean, when you have a look at the times and the data, they went as quick in some of the other races on that particular day. I'll start with you, Hamish.
Well, my first watch of the race, I thought Huey's got it wrong. Do I think he did it deliberately? Absolutely not. Is it easy to get a horse over racing? Absolutely. If you dig a horse up, like he clearly did, and overdo it, pretty hard to slow a horse down. Now, I'm with Dean a bit on it. I'd be wanting to know how Huey's going, because all the highs of Winks are behind him, and he's obviously going through a tricky time. But as soon as the horse got out, I was doing Saturday afternoon racing out in front. I thought, this is a disaster. Can't possibly win. But how it all happens in the speed that it happens, I can understand, Dino.
Yeah, look, it didn't take much for it to happen. And there's a lot of people going with the times of similar races. It's also their animals. And he wasn't just running at a fast speed. Some horses run at a fast speed in a relaxed manner. He was racing himself internally. So he was always going to just bust open, and that's what happened. I mean, he just did it so hard. Not that he couldn't run that pace, but he was just revving way too hard. And that's the thing. They're not like cars. They're horses.
He was found guilty by social media, and then Hamish, he was suspended by the Racing New South Wales stewards yesterday. Do you think he deserves time?
Initially, I thought it was going to be looked at. I didn't think he would get time. I've seen a lot worse rides that didn't get time. So that the inconsistency for me is the issue. I've seen horses not given much opportunity and nothing happens. So I was surprised absolutely that he got a lot. Dino, the one thing that I'm amazed at is how close Farnan was on the line.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, but you just wonder what it does to his preparation going forward. And I just think that, would I have suspended him? Quite possibly. But they must keep going with this line now that they've set the precedent. As Hamish said, there's a lot of rides like it. And if they're going to go down that path, they've got to keep the path.
Wonderful weekend of footy. What game have you got, Hamish?
Well, I've got the hosting tonight. So Saints and Giants. Yeah. Saints win, they're in. Giants win, and they're not guaranteed of much need results. And then I'm calling the Cats and Swans on Sunday, which is, Gary's back by all reports. Joel's back. It's a fun weekend. Dino, did you sleep last night? What have you drunk? What have you eaten today? And how are you going to prepare in the lead-up?
No, I'm very comfortable that we'll win tonight. So, I'm all set for the Saints and to start a big weekend.
It's the best last round of football I can remember for quite some time, Hamish. Even the top four, so much to play for.
The top four sort of, to me, takes care of itself a bit unless something crazy happens. But from six down is fascinating viewing. And, the Saints can finish sixth or they can miss.
Yeah.
The destiny's in their hands. The Dogs' destiny is in their hands. Melbourne and the Giants are relying on so many things to play out. And I've just got a feeling that some things may play out. But I'm a bit with you, Dino. The Saints, I think, have been really good this year. I'm a buyer of the Saints. They've been tricky to read, the Giants. Gee, I'd be so disappointed if they don't take care of their own business tonight, Saints.
Yep.
This is why you need to listen to the Friday fill-up.
This one's at a little bit of odds and not a big play, but I think race 7, number 10, Radiant Warrior, will run well. Well drawn, Yendall, great rider everywhere, but terrific record at Swan Hill, and I just thought this horse would run very well and little chance of beating the favourite. Race 7, number 10, Radiant Warrior.
Gets up around the $5 to $6 quote. Dino, can you help us out again on a Friday, please?
Won't be quite those odds, but a bit more confidence today. I think a very nice horse in the last race. Race 9, number 13, Turin Warrior, was a very good win at Warwick Nabil. D. Oliver rides, was scratched from a race I thought it could win on Wednesday, which was stronger. It should be winning here, race 9, number 13.
I need to pick your brain. Handicap racing, I love it. Like some of my favourite races under the conditions of a handicap. The punters see Behemoth with 60. It's a little bit different this year because the weights are up with COVID-19. But still, history tells you, Dino, that you nearly have to be a champion to carry that weight to win a handicap race like the Sir Rupert Clark.
Yeah, and it gets harder. I mean, it's six over the limit, as you say, in different times. But if it was a 52 limit, it'd be 58. And 58's even hard to achieve. So it's actually, it's more of a challenge, I think. And at the bottom end of the scale, I think a horse like Tagaloa, a three-year-old, usually gets like 52 in a race like this. Just 54 kilos, doesn't sound much, but it might be a little bit of a change. So it's a fascinating race. There's so many ways you can look at it. I'm going to have a little small play on Banquo each way. I think he'll land fourth outside, get a cheap run, and at some stage, look, the winner, will he kick on and win? Only time will tell. But best horse in the race is Superstorm. He'll need a miracle around Caulfield to win.
Dino, text from Ross Stevenson, my partner in crime, on That's Racing. Can you ask Dino tomorrow, race 3, number 3, a little birdie's whispered in his ear, so I can't bet unless Dino gives me the approval.
Race 3, number
3. Pioneer River, Brett Preble, Dabernig and Benny Hayes, first up.
I'm not going to say no. He sharpened up a lot. Off his form last time, I mean, say 1,000 metres is too short, but he has trialled very well. I won't be tipping him, but I'm not deterring him from backing him either. That's a really tough race.
Been a lot of fun as always, boys. I'll leave you with this. When you talk about great handicaps and the great performances in handicap races, I've never seen a greater performance than Cathy Freeman at Stawell that day. Did you watch that vision?
Yeah.
We actually had it on That's Racing this week. We got Maddie Hill to call it for us. I think at some point she gave away 52 metres in the lead up to that race, and it was 40-something. In the final, and I watched it, and I thought, there's no way she can win this. And she got elbowed in the straight and still rolled home.
Yep. Unbelievable, Dino.
I think Gator's sister was going for 3 wins in that race, and that was a bit stiff to run into, Cathy Freeman. Ran third, ran well, got into the placings.
And a cheer out to all our friends in Tassie, including Bear Robertson. He loves this segment, his favourite segment of the week, of course. He coaches North Hobart, boys. He wants you to jump on the bandwagon, and they need a win. And this is John from Devonport, great friends of ours here in Tassie. I'm just wondering if Dean has taken the 81s on the Saints.
No, I'm not that. I'm not that keen. Just get him over the line tonight. All right.
Good luck tonight, Dino. Hope the Saints go marching in, brother.
Thank you, Gareth.
Thank you, Hamish.
See you, mate. Good time.
All right, then. There we go. There's Dean and Haim on.